Communication always tends to be one of those things that every organization can benefit from. And so creating a culture where you're giving consistent and clear feedback becomes a game changer. Because again, that's where you're helping everybody kind of dial into, this is who we are and how we work together. This is what we look like at our best. And then what we saw was,
what if your company's culture was actually working against you? Most leaders know culture matters, but very few know how to shape it effectively. Today's guest has over two decades of firsthand experience helping organizations build strong cultures and higher performance amongst their teams. Jenny Catron has led across corporate, nonprofit, and entrepreneurial spaces, driving real impact in both leadership and culture. Welcome to the Learn It All podcast. I'm your host, Damon Lemby, two-time best-selling author and CEO of Learn It, a live learning platform that has helped upskill over 2 million people over the past three decades. Today, I'll be speaking with Jenny about how leaders can create an operating system that builds and sustains a thriving company culture, drawing insights from her brand new book, Culture Matters. I'm going to be asking her to share her insights on why company culture often becomes an afterthought for busy leaders, show how to build your ideal culture with her five-phase framework, and eight critical skills every leader needs to shape culture. If culture is the most important thing a leader can shape, why do so many leaders look at it like an afterthought?
You know, Damon, this whole topic for me kind of was an accident, if I'm honest. I was your typical, very ambitious, driven leader who wanted to accomplish big things right out of college. And if you had told me, like, fast forward 25 years and talking about culture, talking about stewardship of people, talking about developing leaders would be where my passion was, I would have thought you were crazy. I thought, you know, I'm going to be a CEO of a record company. And what I thought all of that was just like making things happen and barking orders. And then what I bumped into pretty aggressively was the fact that people really are the point, like that developing people is so core to healthy teams, healthy cultures, and ultimately accomplishing the mission of your organization. And those, you know, those crazy goals that we have. And so getting perspective on what culture is and having a, what I would say is like a philosophy around why culture matters is so critical for us as leaders. I think it's an afterthought because we have goals to achieve. We have sales targets to hit. We've got these visions that are big and audacious. We might have investors to keep happy, you know, whatever the, you know, the compelling things that keep you up at night, whatever those things are, you know, that's where your sights are as a leader. And what we miss is that our people are actually the linchpin to making that happen, right? Like our people are the linchpin to making it happen. But I think sometimes we don't know how to do culture, if you will. You know, we know good culture when we experience it, you know, an engaged team that's working well, you know, you're kind of firing on all cylinders, or you know what an unhealthy team looks like, that toxicity, the infighting, the politics, the gossip, the, you know, the things that make a team not so fun to be a part of. But I think most leaders just don't know how to do it. And that's what I've devoted the last 20 years to saying is how. How do you ultimately, what I say is, build an operating system to support your culture? You know, every key initiative in our organizations, we build a plan, we have a system, we have a strategy to help us execute on it. But oftentimes we leave culture to chance. And I think it's because we just don't know exactly how to do it.
So your backstory a little bit. So you started off and you were in the record business,
right?
Which I think is super cool, right?
Yeah, it was
and then
fun.
You got into it and then a nonprofit,
yep.
Right? And so you've seen culture from all different angles, all kinds of different experiences. What inspired you to write the book now about Culture Matters?
Yeah. I really feel like the book has become like this reflection of 20 years of trying to figure it out, honestly. And like you said, it was like I was in the record business, which is highly corporate. I was in a division that was part of the biggest record company at the time. And in the world. And so we were a small division within a monster corporation. Then I'm in the nonprofit space. And then I've been an entrepreneur the last 8.5 years leading my own organization. And all along the way, I've been just putting the puzzle pieces together of what does it take to actually build an operating system to support your culture? Like, what, you know, how do you create the environment where team members thrive? So I feel like it's the reflection of just doing the work for the last 20 years in so many different environments and figuring out what works and what doesn't work. And I had somebody recently say to me, Jenny, this book feels like, somebody who's known me for probably the last 20 years, say, this feels like a reflection of your life's work. Like, this feels like who you are. And it was probably the best compliment I could be given, right? Because it's like, this wasn't like just an idea that I, you know, figured out how to put 50,000 words to, like we sometimes do in book writing. It was like, this was a reflection of just deep work over the last 20 years. And so in many ways, I wish I had done it sooner. But in some ways, I'm like, it's the right time, because I feel like I've put enough work behind it to substantiate what's in it.
So over the last 25 years, what has changed the most when it comes to culture?
That's a great question. I think what has changed the most is leaders' awareness of its importance, I would say. I think we all know, like, we all have a reaction to the environment that we're in. You know, when I was at that record company, the first 8 years were some of the best years of my work experience. Like, great team, highly engaged. I was being stretched. I was growing. I was being developed as a leader, like, you know, just all the right ingredients for a good environment for me to thrive and for me to contribute to the organization's purpose. And then we went through a corporate merger, and overnight the experience went from one where I was absolutely thriving to an environment where I was just struggling. And my role hadn't changed, like my title, my responsibilities, nothing about my role had changed, but I had been moved into another division of the company. So my leader had changed, my team had changed, the environment, the culture had changed. And it was a completely different experience. And I was so baffled by it, because here I was, this super engaged, highly committed employee who was giving above and beyond to helping the organization succeed. And I was thriving along with it, to doing functionally the same work, but having the complete opposite experience, like not wanting to go into work, barely phoning it in, like all the behaviors that we don't like from our employees, I was becoming that person. And I just wrestled with, like, what is going on here? And what I recognized is that there wasn't language and there wasn't conversation around it. So long response to your question, I think we're more aware of it. I think of Matthew Kelly in his book, The Culture Solution. He says, culture, not strategy or technology or industry knowledge or finance, culture is the ultimate competitive advantage of our age. And I think, you know, you look at, you know, Forbes or Fast Company or, you know, Harvard Business Review, and there's a lot of energy and time being devoted to this topic. And I think that's what I'm seeing change. I'm also seeing change. I think there was an era where we thought it was just perks and fun stuff. So for a season, I lived probably not too far from you in Silicon Valley. And, you know, I was right in the heart of where Apple and Google and Facebook and, you know, all the tech giants are. And there was like this, it almost felt like I don't know if this was true, but this was my perception, was that there was this competition to see, well, who gives what perks to their employees? Like, we got nap pods over here, and we've got bicycles to get around the campus over here, and we got free lunch over here, and we got free dry cleaning over here. And it was like all of these perks and, you know, the fun stuff was being named as culture shaping. And what eventually played out is that those weren't the things that were ultimately retaining people. They might attract people to the organization, but they weren't really retaining people. So they were kind of the, I think people perceived that as culture. And I think what's shifting is we're recognizing, hey, that's really not the heart of culture. Like, those things can contribute to culture, but that's not really building the environment that sustains the best talent. So those are a couple of things. I'd be curious if you have observations on that too.
Well, I was just going to say, yeah, I grew up during the dot-com bubble and afterwards, and you would think that culture is all about perks and, you know, kombucha on tap, you know, and everything. And sure, maybe that helped, but at the end of the day, that's not really, I think, what motivated people to come to work and really believe in their organization.
That's right.
I'm right there with you on that. And so, in your book, you describe culture as like an outcome of systems, you know, mm-hmm. Behaviors and leadership practices. How does your framework, your five-phase framework in your book, help leaders move past these hurdles and start shaping culture with actual intention?
Yeah. And I love the way you framed that, because that was what I was trying to get at the heart of as I was building the framework. And in brief, I'll just define the phases really quickly for everybody. We start with assess, like, where are we now? What's our reality? And it's actually a really big challenge for leaders to get an accurate assessment of your culture. Because the problem is, the more senior we are in the organization, the more the experience we have some agency, some influence over. And so what we experience as leaders is rarely the same experience that our employees are having throughout the organization. So it takes a good deal of humility on the part of the leader to say, hey, I need an honest evaluation of what does it actually feel like to be a part of this organization. So it takes some work. So that's the assessment phase. The second phase is define what we aspire to. And I find that a lot of leaders intuitively know what they want. They know that I want more of that, less of that. This is what we look like at our best. Like, they can point it out when they see it, but a lot of times they haven't done what I would say is the good work of defining that, defining the beliefs, the behaviors, the habits that you want to see replicated throughout your organization. And some teams do this better than others, but that definition of getting those instincts out of you and into a defined, a clarified expectation for your team is really, really important. And then the third phase is we build a plan. Like, now we need a plan. We need a strategy to close the gap between what we aspire or where we are and what we aspire to. And that makes sense. We all get that. But that's, that's where sometimes leaders get stuck. The fourth phase is equipping all of our leaders at every level to support the culture. And this, to me, is a really key part of the process. And Damon, you probably know this better than anybody because of what you guys do at Learn It. But so many times we'll even do the assessment. We'll define what we're hoping for. We might even build a little bit of a plan, but sometimes we're not very thorough with the plan, because part of the plan, it means equipping our leaders at every level. And oftentimes we do the episodic, like, definition of values or whatever it might be. And then we move on with business as usual. And we haven't built that operating system. We haven't built one of the tools I define in the build phase is the employee journey grid, where we look at every stage of an employee's journey with the organization, from how we interview and hire them and onboard them to how they exit the organization. And we say, what are we doing at every stage of their engagement with us to ensure we're reinforcing the culture we aspire to? We're reinforcing who we are at our best. And a key part of that is making sure that the people managers in our organization are able to help reinforce that. I see time and time again, and we, the data has been around for forever, that your manager has just significant impact over whether you stay within an organization. And so making sure leaders are really well equipped is a really key part of the implementation of this work. And then, of course, we say the fifth phase of the framework is to commit. Like, we want to just commit to the ongoing work, because the challenge for so many leaders is we do the episodic rah-rah event, or we roll out something that says, hey, here's who we want to be, and then we never talk about it again. So that deep work, and when I'm working on this with clients, we'll often spend 3 or 4 months, usually a deep dive and an on-site visit and then some follow-up work, to look at that employee journey. And I'm not suggesting you layer on a whole other system to what you're already doing. I'm saying, let's look at what you're already doing. What are you doing in your interviewing process, your onboarding, your performance plans and reviews if you do them, your one-on-one meetings with your team members, your staff meetings, our all-hands meetings, all of those different components that every employee is a part of to some degree, how are you making sure the culture you aspire to, those values, beliefs, and behaviors that define who you are and how you work together, how are you making sure those things show up in the systems that already exist in your organization? And to me, that's what begins to unlock really living into the culture you've defined and you aspire to.
I want to go back to, you said that When it comes to employees exiting, that also is a very important part of your culture. Why is that?
Yeah. Oh, this is one of my favorites, Damon, because I think we overlook it so often.
I agree. That's why I totally agree.
I was going to say, I'm probably preaching to the choir with you on this one. Yeah. But I think we overlook it because exits generally are uncomfortable. And sometimes, you know, sometimes it's a really beloved employee who's exiting and that one's just super sad because you're like, gosh, I hate to lose them. I hate to lose that talent, that institutional knowledge. And if I'm honest, sometimes as a leader, when I have a seasoned employee who moves on, I'm a little mad. I'm a little bitter. Like the best of me might not show up when I get that resignation letter, right? Or we have to exit an employee. Maybe they're not meeting expectations. They're not, you know, they do need to move on for whatever the reason might be. And then sometimes we're kind of secretive about that. And sometimes with good reason, in that not everybody needs to know all the reasons why somebody moves on. So my point being, we're awkward in exits because there's a lot of emotion in exits, whether they're positive or negative. You know, it's like there's a lot going on in exits. So my encouragement in this process is we've got to say, okay, one of the key things we do in the definition phase of the work is we help leaders define the values that guide how we work together. Like what are those core convictions? And I've talked about this a bit already, but what are those core convictions that we want to live by that are really important to who we are and how we work together as a team? And then you're asking the question, okay, when people exit the organization, am I still living my values, right? So for instance, a value that's really important to me is generosity. So if I'm annoyed or frustrated because a valued team member chooses to move on, if I am obviously frustrated or I'm dismissive or I don't show up with generosity when I say that's a value, that's sending a conflicting message to the rest of the team, because the rest of the team, and this is really the heart of this question, the rest of the team are watching how you as a leader manage that exit, right? They're watching your behavior. And if you're incongruent with what you talk about all the rest of the time, but you're incongruent in the exiting, that's a breach of trust, right? Like all of a sudden they're like, what is going on here? I had a organization I was working with, and they had quite a bit of turnover for a myriad of reasons. That was part of the reason why they had brought me in to do some work with them, as they were trying to figure out what all the turnover was about. But when we began to dig into it, there was no consistency with how they handled exits. So with every time a team member moved on, even if it was, you know, completely benign, like it was just, you know, that team member found a new opportunity, the staff were skeptical that the senior leadership had moved them on and they weren't telling them the whole story. And so there was all this like mistrust in the organization because they hadn't been consistent. Like one team member would leave and they'd do a big party and another team member would leave and they'd barely talk about it. So they had this inconsistency in how they handled exits. And then of course that created massive mistrust. So what we did when we were working their employee journey grid is we said, okay, at every stage, how are you being congruent with your values and, you know, who you are as an organization? And what does that look like in departures? Because we need to tell the team, hey, here's what you can count on. Not every departure, you can know the full story. Some things are private to that individual, you know, whatever the case might be. But here's what we can guarantee. We can guarantee that this is how you'll be treated when you exit the organization, whether your choice or our choice. Like here's our plan, here's our process. And so that started to, once we implemented that, it started to ease the skepticism in the organization. It took time, right? Because they had to rebuild the trust around that. But again, point being, the rest of the team are watching you. And what are they asking? They're saying, well, how do I know I'm not next? Right. Because if they don't know that there's a process to departures that, you know, especially, you know, when they know it's not the individual's choice, that's the thing that makes them really nervous. So if there's no clear process, well, then they're like, am I next? How do I know? And that breeds mistrust, that leads to disengagement, leads to complacency. And so the intentionality in departures, I feel like is so critical to healthy culture.
Yeah, I agree. And a lot of it is too, If a top performer leaves, you feel a little upset. I like how you said you don't show up sometimes as your best self. That's funny. But at the end of the day, your team's watching and they're completely thinking, okay, well, if I leave, this is how I'm going to be treated.
Yep.
And also what I try to share with people, either I coach or just other leaders I know, it's like, don't cut off your nose to spite your face. If you burn bridges with the individual leaving, you know, somebody who maybe found a better opportunity, they will never come back.
That's
but
right.
So many times I've seen that the grass isn't always greener on the other side, and somebody might come back in a year or two and they'll come back as a more even valued employee because they realize, but if you treat them poor on the way out, like you said, if you don't even mention it to the team, if you kind of dish it off or whatever, you're doing yourself a disservice.
Yeah, that's right. I love that you named that. I think one of the best compliments to your culture is if people can move on and come back with ease, you know, like that it's like, you know, because I think we have to hold that loosely. Like sometimes people need to grow and be developed in another place. Now we want retention as a key part of, you know, of healthy and successful teams. But occasionally somebody has an opportunity and you, in my opinion, you want a culture that celebrates seeing individuals also grow and thrive. And I'm with you. I've seen circumstances where people have then come back and when they feel like that door has been left open and there's an opportunity for them to come back. And usually they're saying, wow, I took this for granted over here and I took this for granted in our culture. And now I'm realizing how valuable, how significant that was. And so that's always a huge testimony to the strength of your culture is when people can also return.
And even if they don't come back, some of the best success I've seen great companies have is referrals from alumni.
Yes.
So somebody no longer works for you, but they say, hey, you know, you'd be a great fit at Learnit because this is what the culture's like, and they refer people to come there. So there's just so many more benefits to treat it the right way than to not. Out of those five phases, which ones do you typically see organizations struggle with the most?
I'll answer it this way. The one that takes the most time is typically the definition phase.
That's what I was thinking.
Sometimes when I'm working with an organization on this, I will, I'll observe like an executive team meeting or maybe another meeting of some kind, but I'll pick a meeting to sit in, especially when the more senior leaders are present. And I will notice, I'll pay attention and see, okay, when you see like that disconnect in a meeting where you know people are not having the same conversation. I'm sure you've coached moments like this, mm-hmm. Damon, where it's like you start to discern that the leader thinks they're saying one thing and the team is hearing something different. And I'll usually, if I'm there in a coaching capacity, I will pause it and say, I think you think you're saying the same thing, but I don't think you are. Let's talk about that more. Because you're exactly right. We struggle to articulate, particularly in senior leadership, we struggle to articulate what we value or what's important to us in a way that helps people understand that. I'll give you an example. I had a leader at a nonprofit who was very concerned about aesthetics in their organization. And I remember I was talking to his director of operations one day, and he was beside himself because they were building out a new facility. And the founder leader had come in and wanted the baseboard colors all changed. Like he wasn't happy with the color of the baseboards. And he was like, Jenny, I can't predict what he wants. Like, he's like, I don't know how to predict what he wants. He comes in and all of a sudden he's changed all the baseboards. So now I've got these work order changes that I've got to facilitate and like extra hours and cost and da 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 da. And I was so curious about it because I was like, this feels like the most like low level thing that, you know, I don't know many CEOs who are too concerned about the baseboard color in their organizations. But the reality was this particular leader was highly creative. The aesthetic and the environment was really, really important to him. And so what that director of operations had missed was that he needed to be conscious of bringing that leader in at the right stage of the work to make sure. But he just thought he had an opinion about a color. It was less about the color. It was more about what the color, the experience the color created, which might sound ridiculous to some of us, but there was a nuance that they were missing each other on, right? Like there was a nuance that just wasn't clear. And that's what we have to work really hard to define, is those just instinctual things. And you have to learn to catch it for yourself as a leader, because then you've got to figure out, how do I articulate this? Because you will have an instinct around something and your team is not catching it, and you're frustrated because they keep doing something that's just a couple of degrees off from the way you would do it. Well, until you can articulate why something is really important to you in a certain way, or there's something in some of the culture work, there's something called a competing values framework, where you will often have inside of your organization values that feel in competition. So this came up with my team this week.
Interesting.
We were working on, I think it was on the book launch stuff. I'm trying to remember the specific scenario, but essentially it was our customer service, the customer experience and selling books were at odds, like not like fiercely at odds, but it was like, which one is more important, right? Because we were, I think it was something on the website that we were redoing. And the team member was like, oh, it was some data. You know, it was my marketing person wanted some more data on something we were getting from the website. But it was going to put more work on the customer to have to enter more information. And I was like, the data is really important. I really know we want the data because that will help us serve the customer later. But if we frustrate them here, we're dead in the water.
Not going to have any data.
Yeah, we're
not going to have any data because they're not going to buy anything.
Yeah. So it was like these two values were competing, and we were both seeing it from different, and we weren't, this wasn't like, this was a very chill conversation. It wasn't like tensious, but it was like, you know, she's coming from the marketing perspective idea of the data to help her know how to serve, you know, and email people and respond to people better. And then the other team members looking at it going, but if I'm a customer and I have to come and enter this information a handful of times, that's really frustrating. And so those were two values that were competing. Both of those things matter to us organizationally, but then we had to say which one trumps the other in those situations. And those are the places where as leaders, we have to bring some clarity. Because I then sat with the team and I said, you know what? At the end of the day, we serve leaders. Like, our heart is to serve leaders. So customer service, serving the leaders that we get to engage with, trumps other values. You know, so like when we have a competing value, then we kind of even have to know which one has more weight organizationally. And again, those are things that you'll bump into as a leader, and the more clarity you can provide, the more definition you can create, the more you equip your team to operate in alignment. So that definition phase, I think, is the one that takes the longest, because you have to really workshop those things that you intuitively know, and then bring some clarity to them to equip the team.
Now, I was just thinking about this. So you had competing values, right? And we talked about clarity. Let's talk a little bit about decision-making when it comes into how it works with a culture.
Yeah, I think this is always the big thing for most teams, right? Is, you know, who gets to make decisions, and how do decisions get made? And that's one of the questions I'll ask usually in the assessment phase of the work, is like, how are decisions made? And I always get like a deer in the headlights look typically when I'm working with teams, because everybody's like, you know, I don't know, you know, it eventually rolls up to the most senior leader in the room and they make the decision, or whatever the case might be. The more definition we have on our culture of who we are and how we work together, that becomes really critical to decision-making. One of the things that we share in the book is the relationship of clarity and trust. And clarity, you know, is the chief indicator of the health of a culture. Like, as leaders, we've got to fight to bring clarity to everything we can. So part of what helps in the decision-making process is the more clarity we have on what is our mission and what are our goals. Like, and these are things that kind of fall into, like a key part of that trust building matrix that we talk about in the book. We need clarity of what's our mission, what are our goals organizationally, what's our organizational structure, like who's doing what, how are we organized to achieve this, what's everybody's roles and responsibilities. And once you've defined a lot of that, you start to give a little bit of a decision-making matrix. Now, you might need to add some more specifics to that, but the more everybody understands who does what, what they're responsible for, We have systems for goal setting and reviews and so forth. The more we're equipping people for decision making. And that organizational clarity is kind of the starting point for that. Now, there's also just making sure that you're training people and equipping people to, you know how to bring the right people in the room for the right conversations for decision making. But the more clarity you've provided to help everybody know who does what and how we engage, it starts to simplify decision making.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And all decisions don't have to go through the same process in the sense of, you know, the most senior person gets to make the decision. It all kind of depends on what the situation is. But I think it's important people know what their roles are and giving them an opportunity to be heard. And then once the decision's made, everybody needs to get behind it and move forward as a team, because it's based off whatever your mission and your goals are.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And that's, I think, another aha when I'm working with leaders on this work, and this was true for me as I was building out the framework, is that it feels clear to us as the leader. So we struggle to understand where team members get stuck. You know, I'm working with a client right now, and this is a very like real time scenario, as everybody's like, well, who makes that decision? And so in the absence of clarity of we've been working on org chart and roles and responsibilities and all of those things, everything rolls up to the most senior leader in the organization. Well, that's not sustainable, right? That's absolutely not sustainable. And so the work we've been doing is going, okay, we've got to get really clear on the structure, who does what, who's around what tables for the right conversations, and getting the right people at the right table for the right conversation is also really critical in decision making. And so, yeah, just looking for where are the roadblocks in our system. And if you ask yourself what's not clear, it usually will help you identify what you need to bring clarity to that will help expedite decision making.
All right, I want to pivot back to what we were talking about earlier around people managers and mid-level leaders. What impact do they have on culture?
This is one of my favorite questions, because they have significant impact on culture. You know, I will say that, you know, more senior leaders have disproportionate influence. The weight of our authority in the organization is helping shape it, and how what we model is what gets reproduced, et cetera. But more and more, the pressure on that mid-level leader is increasing. In fact, I think there was there's some research done by Salesforce not too long ago. And they what they found is that, I'm actually pulling it up. It says this specifically. It says, while employees once considered top executives their most trusted source of company information, now employees rate their immediate supervisor as most important to understanding the organization and its priorities above the executive team. And I've seen this show up in a few different data points that I've looked at, that there's more pressure, there's more expectation on like that mid-level leader. And then that mid-level leader has significant responsibility in that they're coaching and developing the people that report to them. And they're also needing to lead up and equip the leaders above them. So there's kind of this pressure point, this pinch point on that mid-level leader. And in some ways is almost setting them up for failure if we're not conscious in how we're equipping them and making sure we're equipping them well for the responsibilities that they hold, and we're being conscious of that pressure point, because they are who the rest of the employees are looking to for leadership. Like, they're looking directly to their direct boss. And so if that manager is not equipped with knowing how to live into the culture, like if they haven't been trained, one of my really deep convictions is, first of all, when people are onboarding to our organization, we need to do intensive work to catch them up to our culture, like the definition of who we are and how we work together, making sure we're really sharing the stories and the details around our values and talking through where those values compete with one another and what we do in those moments and a number of the things we've already talked about. You have to actually make sure that you're catching employees up to those elements of your culture. You're not just expecting them to catch them. You're actually being intentional to teach them your culture. And then equipping your managers with the skills to know how to be good people managers, because, you know, there's the age old Gallup research that says we don't leave companies or jobs, we leave bosses. And there's some debate around that data, but it keeps popping up for a reason, in that who we're reporting to has significant influence over our experience as an employee. And so making sure that we're conscious of how are we training and developing our people managers to reflect the best of our culture? Like, are we equipping them to do that well? And are we even making sure they have the margin to do that well? That the time and coaching and development, along with modeling our values and beliefs and behaviors as an organization, that we're being thoughtful and intentional to make sure we're leaving space for those things to happen.
I do find that a lot of people leave the organization because they can't stand their manager. And a lot of times their manager is somebody who's maybe a first-time manager and
completely
either doesn't have the skills because they've never been given the tools and resources to learn them, or they're just high performers put into a leadership role and they're frustrated because their people can't pick up the work as quickly as that, say, for instance, they can.
Yeah, that's so good. And we're notorious for this. I've been guilty of this as well. Like, some of your highest performers who are great individual contributors, we think the next obvious step is we make them the head of the team or the department. And they perceive that as well. Like, they, you know, typically we all are thinking, what's the next rung on the ladder? Well, the skills for managing people are typically quite different from whatever individual contributor skills we were doing so successfully. I was that record company that I was at for those first 8 years that I said was such a great environment. We had an HR department that was exceptional, in my opinion. And I thought this was a little extreme back when I worked for them, but now I value it so intensely, in that when I got promoted, when I was about to be promoted to manager of one of our departments, they put me through a 6-month training. It was called EMI University. Like, it was actually named part of their curriculum in the organization. It was a 6-month training that I had to go through that was equipping me for people management skills. And I had to complete that before I actually got the promotion. And now I look back on that and I go, gosh, that was such an investment of time and energy and resources by that organization to make sure when they promoted people into people management, that they actually were doing their best to make sure you were equipped for that new set of skills that was going to be required. But I will tell you, Damon, I've not been a part of an organization that has that level of intentionality in their development. Because frankly, typically we're trying to fill positions so quickly, we're just, you know, moving people into those roles and kind of crossing our fingers and hoping they succeed. And that equip phase of the framework is where I kind of double down on that and saying, we've got to make sure we're training our leaders well so that they can help reinforce our culture.
Can you share an example of a middle manager who transformed the team's culture through intentional, let's say, leadership development?
Oh, yeah, I love that. Okay, so I'm thinking of a client specifically, and I don't know if this was some of the nature of your question, but it might also be helpful context for some listeners. There's an individual who really got the value of culture, and she was promoted into director level of a team. She was responsible for a whole team. And she really valued culture, but the rest of the organization was a little bit unhealthy. Like, it was kind of a little, you know, scattered and inconsistent. But she just focused on the sphere of control that she had. Like, she had this team that she was now responsible for. And so they defined, like, they kind of did the microcosm of the culture work just with their specific team. Got really clear on the values, beliefs, and behaviors that guided how they worked together. She would pick a resource like every quarter that they would, whether it was a book that they were reading or a podcast that they listened to or an article or some resource that she would equip the whole team with. And then they would talk about it and they talk about the application and the team. And so it was very, I would say maybe organic in her approach, but very intentional in she had identified the skills that she wanted to develop for her whole team. She had identified the values that she felt like were really important for them to work well together. And then she just kept reinforcing that in a very, you know, deliberate but not overly complex way. One of the things I will often encourage leaders is just be simple and consistent. You know, find something that you can do that's simple that, you know, clarifies who you are and how you work together, and consistently do it. And so she just, it basically was like a little mini book club that she did once a month with her team. And it eventually became a standout in the organization. And they promoted her into a role where she was responsible for culture for the whole organization. And so that's one of the standouts for me of a leader that was kind of at that director level, who just was super intentional with her team and saw really phenomenal results. Her retention was much higher than anywhere else in the organization, high loyalty within that team. And it eventually, the rest of the organization kind of paid attention and went, wait, what's happening over there? You know, because that team's really thriving. What do we need to learn from them?
So you were talking about how she picked out the leadership skills her team wanted to focus on. In your book, you have 8 key leadership skills. We don't want to touch on all of them, but can you share 2 or 3 that you think are very critical?
Yeah. I communication is one of the ones that like kind of stands out, because I've not done any survey in the assessment phase with any client where communication didn't show up at the top of the list of a challenge for an organization, right? Like, I think it's just the age old challenge for us. And so I think paying attention to, you know, we get comfortable with what's not working in our organization and we find workarounds. Like, we just learn to live in the dysfunction. And communication always tends to be one of those things that every organization can benefit from. And so really looking at and diagnosing, and that's a broad skill, but looking at where are constant communication gaps organizationally, and then helping you kind of zero in on where can we address that, or how do we address that? That one frequently becomes a skill that holds leaders back and really begins to inhibit culture in a significant way. The other one that I would say is really important to culture shaping is feedback, and how feedback is given and received in an organization. What I typically find is leaders who are on one extreme or the other. Either we aren't very good at giving feedback, in that, you know, it's hard for us to have the right level of candor or clarity around what a team member might need to hear, and so we avoid it. Or people who maybe are a little too harsh and too quick. You know, usually we're on one end of the spectrum or the other. We're either like, any feedback we give is pretty soft and encouraging and supportive, or we have leaders way on the other end of the spectrum who are a little harsh and demanding, or we have people who just don't give feedback whatsoever. And so I think learning that skill well, like learning, hey, both are really important. We need to give encouragement and positive reinforcement and calling out what's working and what's good and making sure we're not assuming they know that. That's what we get in trouble for a lot as leaders, is thinking, oh, when they're doing something well, they know they're doing it well. Well, actually, they want to hear that. You need to tell them. You need to give them that feedback. But that feedback, if you're only giving the positive feedback, it loses its power if you're never giving constructive feedback. Like, if you're never saying, hey, here's a way that I feel like you could grow, or that you seemed off. Tell me more about what was going on. Like, that didn't feel like you at your best. You know, let's talk about that. Is there anything I can do? How can I support you? And so creating a culture where you're giving consistent and clear feedback becomes a game changer. Because again, that's where you're helping everybody kind of dial into, this is who we are and how we work together. This is what we look like at our best. And I'm giving you feedback about when you are at your best, and I'm giving you feedback when you're not at your best, because I want to keep pointing you to that North Star of what we look like at our best. So those are two. Communication and feedback are a couple that are really key.
Yeah, I think communication is super important. And so is feedback. I always like to say feedback is like the fuel for learning and growth.
So good.
And you owe it to your people to give them tough feedback if you really care about them. I also like that you had in there ownership, which I think is so important, because you got to take ownership and lead by example as well.
That's so good. Yeah, that's right.
You got your book out, Culture Matters. Let's say a team gets your book and they go through it and they do a book club and they read your book. They go through your value grid, your employee grid, all of those. What can they expect to, what kind of shifts can they have either from a behavior or impact will your book have on them and their organization?
Love that question. And I'll answer it by way of a recent client that I walked through the entire framework with. And this client, when I engaged them, lots of mistrust in the organization. And mistrust was like the biggie. Communication was an issue. Gossip was an issue. You know, again, some of the typical behaviors that we kind of see when something doesn't quite feel right within a team. And I dug in. We did the assessment work. We did the definition work. We built out their plan and we started working the plan. You know, we spent a full year in an engagement with this organization. And then after the year mark, we redid their assessment. So we did the assessment, the all staff survey at the beginning of the engagement. It gave us the scores. The scores for trust were super low and a few other categories were really low. And then we took it a full year later and they had improved their overall score by 13 percentage points, which is a massive move. Like that's a massive shift forward.
Absolutely.
To go 13 percentage points higher in their engagement overall for their employees. And I can't remember specifically how many employees went from disengaged to engaged, but massive movement. And then what we saw was the trust levels had gone up significantly and they were naming for us why the trust had increased. And what was so fun about it was that, you know, because we had open-ended comments for the team to be able to respond, and they, without them realizing some of the work the leaders were doing behind the scenes, they were identifying the outcomes that we were hoping for. They were saying, you know, I have greater trust in the leaders because I now understand how decisions are made, or I understand how people come and go in the organization. And so there was just like in their own words, they were giving us. And then you walk into the organization and the connection is stronger. The communication is clearer. And not without, you know, there's no perfect culture. We're a bunch of messy humans trying to figure out how to do stuff together. But by and large, the trust, the communication just went way up in their organization. And that's after the first year, you know, and some research will tell us that when you have to substantially change a culture, it can take 3 to 5 years because we're talking about behavior change. That's culture change is really behavior change. And that's hard work. It's a heavy lift. And I was really proud of this particular team that within a year, they had seen such significant movement positively, which was super fun.
Before we close out, is there anything else you would like to share with our listeners about your book?
I would just love to share. First of all, Damon, thank you for the work that you guys do in helping equip leaders. Like, you know, just making sure leaders are learning, they're growing. My heart is that leadership is sacred work because we change and affect the lives of the people we lead. As leaders, that influence that we have, we are changing and affecting people. And so there's just an importance to recognizing just how meaningful and how important that is. And I think everybody listening can think about a leader that brought the best out of them, you know, and how your positive experience at a leader who, I think of a leader in my journey who said some really hard things to me, but also really believed in me and was probably one of the greatest influences on my leadership journey so far. And we all want to be that type of leader. And I think that's the heart of even the culture work is making sure that we understand that it really is about just stewarding the talent we've been entrusted with. Like that there are people on our team that right now we have the influence and the opportunity to change or affect, to help them grow, to help them learn, to help them keep getting better. And we want to set the culture. We want to set the environment that makes that possible. And so I think when we lead from a posture of people are the point, they get our best and we get to reap the benefits of a team that's aligned and unified. So super fun work when we see it from that perspective.
Well, thank you, Jenny. Awesome conversation. We talked about everything from how leaders realize that culture is so important, but a lot of times they keep it as an afterthought and they don't do enough about it. And we talked about your lead culture five-phase framework. We talked about how important values are, how they're the anchor when it comes to culture. This decision-making, the role it plays, and some of the key skills that leaders need to lead in today's world. So thank you very much. Where can our audience connect with you at?
Awesome. Damon, thank you so much. You can check out the book at culturemattersbook.com. And then I'm at Jenny Catron on all the social media, J-E-N-N-I-C-A-T-R-O-N. So you can find me there. And I'd love to connect. Also, JennyCatron.com is another great way to find me.
Well, great. So listeners, do me a favor, go out and buy Jenny's book. Okay. And also, for somebody who's involved in the company culture or a people leader, I want you to share this episode with them. Just go ahead and send it to them. And until next time, everybody, stay curious, keep learning, and have a great day. Thank you.